keynote speaker this afternoon is Ed L. He's from Kentucky. His OA intergroup is called Let Go and Let God. Ed came to the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous 38 years ago, but was out of the rooms for 15 of those years. He is sustaining abstinence for 7 years to date. Some of the services Ed has performed in OA, along with sponsorship, were chair for his intergroup, keynote speaker for World Service, and leading newcomer workshops. He is currently acting as an intergroup rep. Please join me in welcoming Ed with his gratitude as he speaks to us about steps 6 and 9 and the principles of willingness, humility, self-discipline, and love. Ed?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ed. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm glad to be here today. I'm glad to be anywhere because I've been on medical leave since April the 1st. So I had my knee replacement April the 2nd. So my physical therapist is going to be real excited if I tell him I stood on this knee for 30 minutes. So anyway, before I want to begin, I just want to thank Region 5. I'm relatively new to the region. I'm an old Region 7 guy. I grew up in northeastern United States. And so I was part of Region 7 for many, many years. And I've been here now since December of 2017. I've been in this region, and it's a wonderful region, like all of the regions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I just want to thank the committee for asking me to come and speak. I was surprised that they did. I was also hoping that they would get somebody else. I'll do my best. I've spoken at these kind of events in the past many times, so every now and then I get a little nervous when I do this, but I'll do the best I can because, yes?
Please allow me to interrupt and say, when you're tired, please sit down.
Oh, okay, I'm good. Yeah, if I get to the point where I can't stand, I will be more than happy to sit. But I'm praying that that doesn't happen. So anyway, I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and speak. Can everybody hear me back in the cheap seats? Okay, all right, good. They can hear me. So before I get started, I just want to tell you I got some great news and some bad news. I'll give you the good news first. The good news is that everybody that's in this room right now are chosen. You are here because your higher power wanted you to be here. And you're here because it's the best place in the world to be. It's in front of a bunch of other compulsive overeaters. It took me a lot of years to figure that out, but you're here, and I pray to God you stay here. The bad news is that once you're in here, it's like the mafia. You can't get out. I know, I tried for 15 years, and I still got pulled back in here, so I'm grateful to be here today. So I'll start a little bit in the beginning. Yesterday, 38 years ago, May the 23rd, 1987, I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting. It was a patients group because that was the day after I left to go to treatment. And this was after 25 years of active compulsive eating and active food addiction and not knowing that I had a disease. It was just what I did. I was known for it. I live in Kentucky. On northwestern Kentucky, but I'm not originally from there. If you can tell by my accent, I'm originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I got to tell you, the difference between Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and northwestern Kentucky is like night and day, okay? That's a good thing, by the way, because, you know, I prayed to get out of Philadelphia. I had a love-hate relationship with it. The love part was mostly the food. If anybody knows anything about Philadelphia, Philadelphia is famous for two things, neighborhoods and food. I did my share of both, especially the food part. I kind of ate my way through Philadelphia and dealing with all of the hassles of growing up in a neighborhood that I was afraid of. So I grew up with a lot of fear. I grew up with a lot of shame. And I grew up with a lot of humiliation. And, you know, when you're growing up as a fat kid, it's a shame that people still do that. They do the fat shaming today. But back then, it was even more pronounced because for whatever reason, people that were not had this disease felt as though it was okay to, you know, make up names for people and, you know, just talk about them and treat them terribly. I was treated terribly growing up, and not just by my family, but sometimes it was neighbors. And so I grew up with a desire to get out of Philadelphia. That was my lifelong goal, and I ultimately did. And so I won't give you that story because that's not my lead today. But I will tell you that when I got out of Philadelphia, I was the happiest I'd ever been. And it didn't stop me from eating, though. It really didn't. I ate compulsively for a lot of years. And fortunately for me, like I said, by the time I became an adult, got out of Philadelphia, went to college and all of those things, I got introduced to this program as a result of watching TV all night long and binging. I used to sit and watch CNN all night long, and they used to advertise a rehab, a drug and alcohol rehab. But they also talked about that this place had an eating disorder component to it. And I thought to myself, after all these years, after 30 years of active addiction, I said, damn, I wonder if I got an eating disorder. I kind of thought to myself, maybe I got a problem with food. So I ended up calling, and you know, this lady asked me, the intake person asked me this question that altered my whole thinking. She asked me this question. She said, well, how long do you think you've been using food as a drug? And I said, oh my God. And I said, I guess all my life. And it was that, this was before I got the treatment, before I knew anything about the 12 steps or any of that stuff. When she asked me that question, it made me think that food was a drug. Now, I gotta tell you, I was one of those people that was judgmental of people with drug addictions. See, I never wanted to be a compulsive overeater. I wanted one of them cool addictions like alcoholism. You know? That's so much cooler than compulsive overeater, you know. I wanted one of them really cool addictions. But, you know, when I went to treatment in 1987, I was fortunate that the place I went to, they didn't look at the difference between alcoholism and compulsive overeating. They focused on step one, period, for 30 days. And we used to do this thing called whole group therapy, where they would take drug addicts and the eating disorder people and put them all together in a room. And I'll never forget my first time learning about humility and needing others. I got a pass. They used to give us these day passes where you can go into town. And they paired me, North Philadelphia kid coming from the hood, you know, and they paired me with this big hat, big cowboy hat looking guy from Wyoming some damn where. We must have looked like frickin' frat walking down the damn street together. But we were so scared. Like, I was scared I was going to eat, and he was scared he was going to get high. And we hung on to each other on that pass and walked around looking at things. It was just a day pass, you know, like go home and come right back. And that was the first time I realized that I need to rely on other people. It's the first time. Because, see, I grew up with, you know, the old attitude, if you're going to have anything, you got to get it yourself. It's all up to you. If it's to be, it's up to me, right? That was a thought process that I carried for a lot of years. So for the next 15 years, I was in OA and all in OA. The one thing I found in when I first went to that first meeting, and it was a patients group, it wasn't out in the regular OA meetings yet. We were still a group. We had a meeting every night. And by the way, I got to tell you, the place I went to, it looked like the brochure. Like you get the brochure, it was all these rolling hills and they had horses and it looked just like that. In the brochure, it said, nightly AA, NA, OA meetings. I missed that whole part. I'd missed that whole part. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. So when I found out, I said, there's a meeting here? He said, there's a meeting every night. I said, OA? Yeah. And I had no clue. I just went to the meeting, and first time I heard the word God, I interrupted the meeting. I have a question. I didn't know the protocol yet. So I said, well, what if you don't believe in God? And this kid was at the meeting. She was only 19. To me, she was a kid. She said, no, it's God as you understand God. Just like that, I got it. I said, oh. So it's not like the God that my mother understood, or my father understood, or my friends understood. It was the God of what I understand. And that one kid changed my thinking. That one kid, she was 19. That same kid, by the way, one day I was asking this question. I had a lot of questions. I said, well, what do you share meaning? What do you talk about? This little girl said, you share your experience, strength, and hope. Boom, another one. This kid, I don't know what that kid's doing today, but I hope and pray she's sober and clean and living a great life, because she certainly did change my life with the thinking. Because that, from that point on, I knew when you go to a meeting, experience, strength, and hope. The big book says our stories disclose as in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. So I don't have a lot of time to talk about what it used to be like, but I will tell you what happened. So what happened for me was I was one of those people that got struck abstinent. Like the day I got in recovery, I was in. Because I knew it's what I needed. I didn't have to figure it out. You know how they tell you people, we tell newcomers, and I wish you would stop doing this, but anyway, we always tell newcomers, we suggest you attend at least 6 different meetings. I hate that. Listen, go to every meeting you can get to. I don't care if it takes 100 meetings, go to them. Because when you're in a meeting, there's a chance for you. There's a chance if you're in the meeting. My sponsor tells me when I came back after many years of relapse, he said, are you better off in OA or out of OA? I guarantee you I'm better off in OA. Because what happened to me after 15 years of actively working the program, and when I say actively, I mean actively. I was part of the committee that put this together, 1993, World Service, the last business conference they had in Los Angeles in 1993. I was there representing South Central Pennsylvania Intergroup, and we voted on this to put that together, these 12 steps and 12 traditions. And let me tell you, you should have seen that crowd. It must have been 300 people there. And that place roared with excitement and collect, because it had been taking 10 years to get these books together. When I came into OA, we had a 12. We didn't have a 12 and 12. We had a 12. When I was in treatment, they gave me a big book. They gave me a 40-day book. They gave me an AA 12 and 12. And they gave me another program, a book that's not program-related, so I won't get the name of that book. But those are the books I had. So when I started going to meetings, there was one meeting in Hazleton, Pennsylvania. One. Tuesday night, Hazleton. That meeting's not even there anymore. But that meeting saved my life. For 11 months straight, I went to that meeting every week and never missed one. And then I got promoted on my job, and I moved down to the Philadelphia area, and I thought I had died and went to OA heaven. It was a meeting every hour on the hour, every other corner there was a meeting. You look at the meeting list, it'd be like 150 meetings. I don't know. It was like, I thought, my God, I didn't even realize, oh, he was this big. And you know what? My old sponsor, his wife, told me that the reason why you do service is you find out that OA is bigger than your little meeting here in Hazleton. That's why we do service, because without service, OA would cease to exist. Because remember, in all, technically, we are a nonprofit organization. And there's nobody giving money to OA outside of us who give money to OA. If all of us stop giving money, there's no more OA. No more books to be published. No more World Service Office. No more websites to be handled and managed. That all comes from us. So it's all part of what I found to be working the program. So I went to meetings, I went to meetings for 15 years straight. And I never, in 15 straight years, I never had a week go by without going to a meeting. And then in 1998, right around 1998, I started going to meetings. And by then, there was a lot of stuff going on in the meetings about food planning, and there was all kinds of food allergy information. And I started listening to that nonsense and thinking, well, maybe that's my problem. Maybe I'm allergic to some foods. And I started listening to all that crap. Now, keep in mind, I came into meetings. I was 70 pounds when I came into the meetings. I lost 167 pounds eating any damn thing I wanted. You know what the only thing I didn't do was overeat. I never overeat one time. But I ate all kinds of food. I didn't know the difference between a carbohydrate and a starch. I mean, I didn't know the difference. I didn't focus on that. I focused on these 12 steps. That's what I focused on. Because if you focus on the steps, everything else will take care of itself. So what I did was I started listening to all that stuff, and next thing you know, I was playing around with food. I felt like I needed to get a better program and a better this. I even went out and tried to get religious, and I went and got baptized. Oh, by the way, if that's part of your faith tradition, not putting it down. But I didn't need to get baptized. What I needed to do was complete a fourth and fifth step. That's what I really needed to do. But instead, I said, I better get religious. And so I went out and got baptized and did all of those things and started going to church and doing a lot of things like that. But my food started slipping away from me. Suddenly, where food was in its proper perspective, now it became forefront in my mind. It was all I could think about. When I go to the meetings, instead of thinking about how this person is working their program, I can learn a better way to work their program, I start going to meetings hoping that somebody was going to tell me something about food. You know, our program is not called Food Anonymous. It's called Overeaters Anonymous. My disease is about overeating, or in some cases, for many of us, it's undereating. But it doesn't matter whether you're binging, purging, whatever it is, it's the same disordered eating. It's the same. So the end result of that was I went into a little relapse. I call it my little relapse because it lasts for about a year. But here's where the steps that I'm talking about today come in. I had to get humble. Now, you know, if you got 14, 15 years under your belt, you kind of think you know a little bit about the program, right? The truth of the matter is, I started relying on things outside of these steps. A food plan will not get you recovery. It will give you the direction and it'll help you with managing food, but it will not get you recovery. So what I did was, I was fortunate about this. I didn't leave the rooms. I went to meetings, kept going to meetings, and that's when I reached out to my old sponsor. His name is Alan. Some of you may know him. And Alan and I started working together, and for a year, Alan guided me back through the steps. Took me back through steps one and all the way up to step four, and I did a step five with Alan. And I was in better shape. 2000, I decided I wanted to go and start reaching for something else other than food. I started looking for ways to make more money. So I decided I was going to become a timeshare salesperson because I heard they make a lot of money. So I moved from Pennsylvania, and I moved to Virginia. And in 2000, that was a great move for me. But I was in the travel and tourism industry, and everybody in this audience probably knows what happened September 11th, 2001. The travel and tourism industry is not the industry you wanted to be in 2001, and that's what I was in. And the end result was that my business started going downhill, my job was going downhill, and within a year's time, I was back into the disease. But only this time, I made the worst mistake I can ever make. I made a decision that I was no longer going to be focusing on my compulsive eating. I was going to leave the rooms and focus on my financial problems. That was in 2002. Now, you got to understand, for 15 years, absent or in my disease, I'd never left the rooms. I said I was going to leave for a while. That while turned into 10 years. Never in my wildest dreams do I think I would have ever left these rooms. You got to understand, I was a kid who grew up never thinking he had any value, never thinking anybody cared for them. Even God didn't love me. I remember saying that. Even God didn't love me. How could he? Look how miserable my life had been. And I left the rooms. So I want to give you a quick warning before I move on. If you're thinking about leaving, get that out of your head. That's a dangerous thought. I don't care if you've been binging all weekend. If you're in, you're in. And this is the place to be, because there's no better place for recovering or trying to get recovery overeater than in these rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. So I left the rooms and I was gone for 10 years. I never thought I'd do that. Gained 100 pounds in less than a year. Who'd have thought I did that? All the unmanageabilities I had that brought me into the room came back. So I've done the research, y'all. You ain't got to guess what'll happen. I can tell you what'll happen, okay? It happened. Not only did I get broker, not only did I get, did I lose money, but all of the crazy thoughts, the suicidal stuff came back. I even went to try to go to hypnotism. Hypnotism? What a joke. When I tried that in the 80s, you know what I did? I would go to the hypnotist office in this office and come out and there was a fast food joint right on the corner. That didn't clearly work. Well, all that unmanageability came back and my sleep apnea came back with a vengeance, only this time it was worse. I couldn't stay awake, and eventually I fell asleep at the wheel and crashed my car and totaled somebody else's car. It was just a disaster. So I came, but what happened was I was working in retail stores at that time, and I was sitting in a store in a Kmart, and this elderly gentleman, I say elderly because he's probably older than what I am now, he walked up to me, and I'm sitting there. I didn't know this guy from a can of paint. And he walked up to me and took his finger and stuck it in my stomach. And this is what he said. He said, "What are you going to do about that?" Who does that? Who does? I couldn't imagine going up to a stranger, somebody I don't know from anywhere, and putting my hand on them. But that's what this elderly man did. And you know, that shamed me so badly, I went back to OA. I went back that year, June of 2012, I came back to OA. And, you know, when I used to go to meetings, people would cry all the time. I hated people that cried at meetings. I'm like, man, what the hell? When I got back, every damn meeting, boo, crocodile tears coming down. Every meeting, I was crying. I came back in 2012. I went right back to my old sponsor, Alan. And he and I worked together, and I worked with him, and sure enough, he brought me back from the brink again. And, you know, things started getting better. And I did my fourth and fifth step with him in Cleveland. In 2013, they had the World Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. And I went and came to that, and I worked with Alan and did a fourth and fifth step with him. But what happened after that, I left the rooms again. But I will tell you, I left the rooms not so much because I didn't want to go to OA. I was on the road traveling and doing all kinds of stuff. I had no stability in my life. I had a home that I couldn't even stay in. So I was traveling all over the United States, and for the next 4 or 5 years, that's what I did. I traveled around, and by the grace of God, an ex-girlfriend of mine called me up and told me, she said, "Ed," she called me to apologize for how badly she had treated me in our relationship from 20 years ago. Hell of a ninth step, huh? So she called me up, but she also told me, "Hey, there's some great jobs here in Kentucky if you want one." I told her, I said, "Hey, I have no allegiance to Virginia. I love it here, but if you find me a good job in Kentucky, I'm there." And sure enough, I moved to Kentucky in 2017, started working for the state of Kentucky as a social worker. That's what I do now. By God's grace, come July the 31st, that'll be my last day. Because August 1st is my retirement date. So I'm looking forward to that. Yep. So let's talk about the sixth step, the ninth step. The sixth step always talks about humility. Now, it's important to know that there's a big difference, and you should read that step six closely. There's a big difference between humility and humiliation. I had been humiliated for more than half my life. Humiliated in the disease, and even humiliated when I came back, when I was out in active addiction. But when I humbled myself and said, "I need help," guess what? The help is always there. The help is always there. And you know, I'll say this real quickly about the meetings. You know, when everybody knows what happened with COVID hit, and all of a sudden everything went to Zoom meetings. I have no problem with Zoom meetings. I go to them all the time. I go to three of them a week. But I also go to three in-person meetings. If at all possible, you need to get around other people. Because, see, what I've learned in over these years, in 38 years of being in and out of these rooms, it's the connections that make us well. You see, I grew up with that belief that I had to do it all on my own. And I tell you, if I could have by now, I mean, I'll be 70 years old this year. If I could have did it, why would not have did it 30, 40 years ago? somewhere in our literature says that we were never meant to face this disease alone, and we're not. I face this disease every day, but I always come in it with you guys. The speaker, one of the first speakers here this week and shared, she said something that really, she talked about her prayers in the morning. My prayer in the morning always starts out like this. I say, God, thank you for getting me up this morning, putting breath in my body, giving me another chance at life. And then I say, I want to thank you for all your blessings. And then I always throw in this. I want to thank you for this fellowship called Overeaters Anonymous and for all the good people in it who helped me find my way back to you. I couldn't have did it by myself. Because if I could have, I would have did it 30 years ago. But I couldn't do it by myself. I needed other people. And so the God of my understanding today, I did not find it in churches. I did not find it in mosques. I did not find it in all of the fancy books I read in college. I studied all kind of philosophy and religion and all that stuff. But you know where I found it at? In the faces of the people in these rooms. You guys are God with skin on. And that's where I found God at. And so that sixth step talks about being humble. And so I was humble enough. I went, came back to Kentucky. When I moved to Kentucky, I was still a little bit into food then. I wasn't humble enough yet. But I knew I was coming back. And when I went to my first meeting, I met my sponsor. And guess what he had did? Left the rooms for 10 years. Duh! Like, that's my sponsor. And he walked me through the what they call the 30 questions. Now, by show of hands, how many people have ever heard of the 30 questions? Guess what? You guys way smarter than me because I never heard them in my life. They didn't, for whatever reason, up in the Northeast where I grew up at in OA, they didn't have the 30 questions. But those 30 questions are in the back of the guide to sponsors. Phenomenal. They take you right through step one all the way up to step four. And I did those 30 questions. I loved it so much, I did them twice. So my sponsor and I start working together. And when I did my seventh step with him, now he and my sponsor and I met. We met at the church where we have our Monday night meeting at. And when I did a seventh step with him, he did a prayer that's based upon his faith, his religion. But you know what? It didn't bother me at all. Why? I don't need his religion. I need his guidance. I wasn't there to get his religion. I'm still not a very religious person. Okay, I'm not. Although I consider myself a Christian. I do. I consider myself a Christian only in the sense that I follow and believe in the precepts of Jesus Christ. Not to say that anybody in here has to have those same things. They don't. But what I do know is that when you work these steps, you got to have somebody that's going to walk along with you. And what I've learned in OA is that everybody here has a higher power. And it doesn't matter what you call your higher power. See, I had a higher power even before I was in recovery. The problem was it was food. Because your higher power is whatever you turn to in a time of need. If you turn to food, there's your higher power. If you turn to anger, there's your higher power. God willing, God bless you, if you turn to violence, there's your higher power. Whatever you turn to in a time of need, that becomes your higher power. And, you know, the only way I know to make food not my higher power is to do that step three where it says we've made a decision to turn our will over to care of God as we understand God. And my understanding of God is different than it was when my mother was standing around telling us horror stories from the Bible. That stuff used to scare me to death. I used to go to church and people would be falling out and all that. I was like, I don't know what they got, but I don't want it. But I today don't feel that. I got my sister is a practicing Muslim. My two best friends in Philadelphia are practicing Muslims. Doesn't bother me their religion because everybody's higher power is different. When he came down to work on the steps with my sponsor, he had me sit down. And I did my fourth and fifth step with him. And he said, now this is what you're going to do. He said, all of those people on your eighth step, those are the people you got to make your amends to. So guess who was on that eighth step lift first? Me. So many people start thinking about all the things they've done and the people they've hurt. You know what? I'm going to tell you, I believe we've all hurt people in our lives, but I'm here to tell you, if you've been an active compulsive eater, you hurt yourself first. You hurt yourself first, family second. And I needed a big amends to myself more than I needed anything. Most recently, my amends to myself was about my relapse. Why was I in relapse all those years, God? Why did that happen? You know why? Because I decided that my higher power wasn't God anymore. Maybe I was the God, my will. When I do my prayers in the morning, my prayer is always a third step prayer. And when I do my third step prayer, I'm doing that third step again. I'm turning my will and my life over to God as I understand Him. So today, when I work these eighth and ninth steps, I recognize that there's a lot of people on my eighth step lift that's not even around anymore. What do? I can write a letter to them. I can write a letter to God. Because I actually feel like in some cases I owe God an apology. I walked away from God for a long time. Because see, God never moves. We move. Why do we move versus God moving? Because we are self-driven. We have self-will. That's the way we are. Thank you. We're self-willed. As the big book calls it, self-will run riot. So to keep myself out of self-will run riot today, I try to humble myself to recognize that I have a long way to go. I'm nowhere near where I want to be in my recovery, but I'm in these rooms, and so are you. Something I figured out a long time ago in OA, and that is that anybody that walks into an OA meeting, I don't care where city you're in, what state, what country, you've already done what most compulsive overeaters will never do. See, most compulsive overeaters will never see the inside of an OA meeting. For all of the people that are in this room right now, I bet you there's 1,000 more that need to be here. Walk around your town wherever you are, go into the Walmart or big box stores, look at the size of the people in those stores. It used to be that way 50, 40 years ago. You see one or two heavy people. Now, like a third of the people in there are overweight. A lot of people are struggling with this disease. And, you know, we're responsible for carrying the message. The OA responsibility says always to extend the hand and heart of OA to those who share my compulsion. And for who am I responsible? For this, I am responsible. So I'm carrying the message today to the best of my ability. I work in Let Go and Let God in a group. As my bio said, I recently, my term as chair was over with, so I gave that position up. And now we have an interim chair right now. And, you know, I still work, though. I still work with them. I have sponsees that I work with. And my sponsor and I see my sponsor every week. We go to meetings together. A couple of them, in fact. But I'm going to wrap this up by telling you this. I always have a hard time getting through this without getting emotional. I'll try my best. This is from the 12 and 12, by the way. Nothing new. But if you've never read it, pay attention to the last two paragraphs in step 12. This is what it says. It says, "We who began working the steps in order to recover from compulsive eating now find that through them we have embarked on a lifelong journey of spiritual growth." Listen to this part. "From the isolation of food." Isn't that terrible? "From the isolation of food obsession, we have emerged into a new world, walking hand in hand with our fellow OA members and our higher power. We are now exploring this world, using the great spiritual principles embodied in the 12 steps as the map to guide our way. We gratefully follow in the footsteps of many others who have walked this way before us, and we're gratified to be making footprints of our own for others to follow. Every one of you are making footsteps." See, someday you may be the only big book or 12 and 12 somebody ever reads. Listen to this one. "Those who live this program don't just carry the message. We are the message. Each day that we live well, we are well. And we embody the joy of recovery, which attracts." I never thought I could attract anything to me. But it says here, "We're always happy to share our secret, the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, which empower each of us to live well and be well one day at a time." Thank you for letting me share.
Was doing, and they were having a convention, an intergroup convention. I had never heard that term before. And they had it like every year, and now it's decades. So if I had a hat, I'd tip it to you. So it's just a wonderful thing. There are people that I know and love in Overeaters Anonymous. And I've got to make it clear,
up to about 10 years ago in my recovery, I really could not feel the love of people or for people. There are reasons for why that happened, but recovery has helped me out of that space, and now I find what it, love and understanding beyond my wildest dreams. And so to see people and to see people at a World Service and these things and to be personally involved on so many different levels, I feel sad sometimes because there are people who are in the program in a long time and all they know is their home meeting. So I have a friend here, Kevin. Some of you know Kevin, right? Kevin's right. Where is Kevin? Anyway, Kevin and I were at a convention in the Chicago metropolitan area. We were both standing at the sign-in place. We were both looking for a roommate. And out of that, I got to have what I hope to be a long-time friendship. And we came here together. We're rooming together. We've done that to other conventions. And I've gone to visit in his home. He's a wonderful artist. I've been in his home, stayed overnight, and got to see his sculpture and his paintings. So, you know, my cup just runneth over with this. I was 74 years old on May 19th. Last week, I was in Arizona, and I have this depth and the breadth of love and appreciation. I have a friend of 50 years who was my professor in 1972. In 73, he asked me to go with him to India so he could visit his friends and family and to see parts of India. It was for a month and a half. So anyway, my cup runneth over. Last thing I'll say is Joe L. was my sponsor. Some of you remember him. And seeing all these Region 5 people really stirs up, you know, wonderful positive feelings and gratitude for that. Thank you. Can I take this with you?
Have other positive pitches? Negative one? Negative? Really? Come right up. Positive pitches. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, everybody. Mary Compulsive Eater.
Hi.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me your name again. What was your name? What is your name? Ed. Ed. Thank you. Ed, you were on fire. You were on fire. Your enthusiasm for this program is contagious. I love it. Thank you. Some things that touched my heart. When you're in a meeting, you have a chance. You have a chance. How many times did I leave these rooms? My God, how many times? And I remember when I came back, I thought, I just want to stay. I want to have abstinence that is sustainable. And I just want to be able to stay. And that's what's happened. It's a freaking miracle. And to focus on the steps instead of the food. Thank you for saying that out loud. Thank you. I needed that reminder. The connections make us well. We were never meant to face this disease alone. And I noted that you thank God every day for the people in OA. I have a nightly list. I thank God for certain people. I write down names. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. How about if I thank God for all the people? I love that. Thank you. That your higher power is whatever you turn to in a time of need. That really stood out to me. I say, God is my help in every need. I say that to myself all the time. And yet I turn to other things. So thank you for that reminder. And then I heard something at the table while we were having our discussions of, you know, to have a 2-minute elevator speech ready. That you might, you know, and this was, we were sharing about being the only version of the big book or OA that someone sees. And then I thought, yeah, and from this convention, I can say, be ready with that elevator speech. How fun is that?
We have time for a couple more positive pitches. You sure? You know, I heard a couple things early on. You know, this disease is like an elevator ride down. There's no stopping. But you can always get off and take the steps back up. Well, you can applause here. Thank you. No. The other thing is, I came in about 276 pounds, but I was on my way to 300, but that's another part of the story. But I came in, and a couple of people said, Michael, if we eat less, we weigh less. And I said, well, how do you do that? Well, we'll show you. In my particular case, I was shown. But you know, it's not all about the food. It's about the food over these nouns. However, I got a tap on the shoulder. Michael, in OA, there's just a little bit more to this. And there is a lot. There is a lot. So maybe you realize we come in as me. When you come in, just flip that M. Where's it going to go? To we. It's we. It's we do for us what we could never do for ourselves. But anyway, do we have any more positive pitches? Oh, yeah, please come up. We have time?
Do I have to use my real name? I'm Liz, a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Ed.
Thank you, Michael.
Couple takeaways. I get choked up. Don't leave before the miracle happens. It's not our timeline. It's our higher power's timeline. And I said to the table, I said, one of the things that really gets to me is when somebody's left the rooms and they have that incredible courage to come back. And I get teary-eyed because that hope is there and they have come back to be a part of it. I came in March 87. I don't remember the date, but it was that time when those females in green little uniforms were selling things. That was my last binge. That was my very last binge. So the message of hope, I'm so bad about that. I just want to be like there. The message of hope and to keep coming back. The other thing that I knew to be true, but just we are the message, but we are the 12 and 12. We are the big book. We are OA. And that's really important. So to have that courage to share that not only with us, the we part, but all those who are suffering out there. So that bit of encouragement to remember that, to be kind and gentle and soft with those who are still suffering. When you shared in your story about your childhood and growing up, you know, the trauma that we recover from happens in these rooms so that we then can have that compassion and that care to extend the hand to those who still suffer. And we don't blame each other. We hug each other and we love each other. And so I'm really grateful for that. And I thank everybody who's been part of the service. And all of you came to Milwaukee. Welcome.
Here you are.
Oh, jeez.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ruth. I'm a compulsive overeater. One of the things, you know, with Ed, it was great what you said, but we could all be Eds or Ed, what's a woman's name? We can all be him or her if we work the program and we're humble. This is very humbling for me because I've been in the program for 23 years and I was abstinent for 5, but I focused on the food and the weight and it was like a diet club and then it was having all these women friends and it was, whoa. And then when I got divorced and left town and got a new job, I lost my abstinence and, you know, and I kept going back, but I kept going to one meeting a week for years. I kept going to one meeting a week because I knew that if I wanted somehow to get abstinence back, I had to be in the rooms. That's the first thing you do is get in the rooms if you want to recover and you're not going to meetings or, and I believe in eyeball to eyeball. how are you going to recover? You're not going to recover. It's a lot of work. But it's, and it is. I never wanted to do work. You know, I don't think addicts do. You know, give it to me. Give it to me. I want to take it. Don't, I'm not going to do any work. It's work. I hated it. But the rewards, I mean, my, you know, it's like finally face the fact that you're going to be dead. If you're not dead physically, you're going to be dead spiritually or emotionally. And I think those are worse than dying physically. I really do. I've been there. So anyway, but I've been relapsing a lot. And I'm like, why? Why? You know, I say my prayers. I go to meetings. God sent me here. My old sponsor called me up and said, you want to go, Ruth? And I thought, no way in hell do I want to go. No, it's the weekend. Try to get out of it. I said, are you sure it's this weekend during? And are you? And yes, it is. So I came with her. That's higher power. Higher power, because I've been praying, you know, to God to get my abstinence back. What I heard Ed say was connections will make us well. And what I wasn't doing was connections. People, the food is the beginning. And I thought if I kept out the food, weighed and measured and everything, I'd stay abstinent. No. It's the people. God told me, my higher power told me, people connections, like the tools. I would work every tool but calling someone. You know, I'd go to meetings. But the connections, I don't know how to express it, the ones that I never had when I was growing up, the ones you get when it's eyeball to eyeball, the connections of letting other people love you and take care of you and care about you. Those are the connections that I need that I never had, and that's why I ate, because I never had the connections. And so, and I, for me, that will be the hardest part, to make those connections with people. Because, you know, I grew up with, you're not good enough, you're not loved enough. We all did. I mean, I think every addict has the same childhood in different ways. But so I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I'm going to stop. But thanks. And another thing, have fun. Have fun. The child in you needs to get out. Thanks.
I think that stop sign is a little overbearing. You say, we suggest you stop. Anyway, I just want to share a couple of things. You know, in the days of my compulsive eating, I spent a lot of days in that. I was very cagey. I loved ice cream. Loved it. But I was very cagey. I ate ice cream from the bottom of the container until the top fell into the bottom, then everybody knew. The other thing I'd like to share is I loved, you know, M&M peanuts. Not M&M peanuts. Not the big bag. I remember Cleveland, Ohio, driving on the freeway. I've got a bag between my legs, 300 or 400 of them in my, between my legs, and I dropped 2 or 3 of them. I'm going probably about 60, 70 miles an hour down the freeway. You think I would go back in the bag to get a couple more? No, I'm down on the floor trying to get the, so. But also, there's been a great emphasis about meetings. Now, what I learned about meetings, and we try to attend as many meetings as we possibly can, and that's vital. But what I heard not too long ago is that when we don't attend a meeting, we miss the opportunity to find out what happens to people that don't attend meetings. So, anyway, are we nearer a closing? Oh, okay. Well, I don't follow script, so. Anyway, wonderful, thank you. Thank you. Come in, please, come on. Please, right, come on up. Hi there, please, come on up.
Okay, I'm Christine G. Hi. And it's so good to be here. And I came kicking and screaming. But great, great talk, Ed. That was beautiful. It's beautiful. And I love some of the things you said. You may be the only copy of the big book someone will ever see. And that makes me want to tear up too. You are the message. You are the message. And you know, I'll never look at a bee the same again. I just won't. And that'll remind me to be connected instead of eating my brains out. You know, be disconnected and just eating. And then this is in the literature. I think the AA 12 and 12 about. We've got an addict. We were either the top banana or the bottom of the bunch. Top banana. There's no in between. But I've become in between through the fellowship. I can be bruised and all that, but I've become in between. I like myself these days. It's so nice. It's just so nice to wake up happy for no reason at all, just because I woke up, you know? And that's the fellowship. And lastly, you know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. That's it, you know, I'm all I think about. And then I heard, just lastly, the thing I heard was, be kind and gentle with those who are still suffering. It's so hard. This disease is so hard. I'm very emotional. I didn't pick up on that. But it is so hard to stay clean with your food. We have to take the tiger out of the bottle 3 times a day. We do, at least. You know, you could go all day for that matter. But to be kind and gentle, and be kind and gentle with yourself if you're still suffering. You know, and I, too, that 1,000-pound phone, I don't like picking it up. But I'm inspired from this to pick it up. So, thank you.
Okay, let's see. We're about time to close. Yeah, I just read this. You're drinking too much coffee when you go to an AA meeting just for the free coffee. But anyway, let's see here. Where are we? Here's some reminders for the rest of the day. Am I right, Clay? Yeah. Here are the reminders for the rest of the day.